Howard Jeffs fizzes with ideas about sea kayaking. Twice I've been to seminars he's taken, and both times I have come away with great ideas. He has a fantastically inventive and active brain. I'm Simon Willis, and this is another podcast for SeaKayakRoots.com, in which Howard Jeffs talks about the different designs of boats he's produced for his own company and others, his recently re-released book, and how he started.
An aunt had a friend who had a canvas-covered PBK. He was a professor in Ottawa University, and used to come across and lecture with my uncle in Manchester University. And when he wasn't using his boat, I could loan it. And so I paddled on the Marine Lake in Southport, which is the delightest bit of seacoast in the country, and used to use it in the summers. And so that's where it started, really. And then that led into D of E by kayak. And then...
How old are you at this age?
Oh, it was very late 60s. So, yeah, I was probably about 12, 13. Right. Yeah, that sort of age.
So you've always had that thing about kayaking?
Yeah, I mean, but people always associate me with kayaking and climbing, but in fact, I actually learned to sail first before I started kayaking. So the lake that I sailed on was just, it was just something else to get onto the water, really. So, yeah, I was a sailor first, really, then a kayaker, and then became a mountaineer. In that sort of sequence. So I used to use that, and then I was in the air training course, so then we used to do stuff with that, so that sort of evolved from there, and then joined the Air Force, and it went on from there, really.
So it was the Air Force you were in?
I was in the RAF, but I used to work in the Marine branch, so I used to be an engineer on boats in the Air Force, but that's one of those, that's a tail over a pint.
Yeah, okay, it goes on for a bit.
Different book.
Okay, so when you came out, did you decide, right, I'm going to make a living from my kayaking, or how did it work out?
Oh, no. I left the Air Force and then went to Plasty Brennan, worked there for 7 years. And that's where the book sort of took root from there.
Hang on a second, because a lot of people would aspire at the almost to work their kayaking career to work with Plasty Brennan. You just said that I came out of the Air Force, went to work with Plasty Brennan. How did that happen?
Well, I was still in the Air Force and I had a climbing accident, where I broke my leg quite badly. I was in hospital for a year, and good military service and surgeons stuck me back together. And I'd sort of had possibility of working at some of the military centres. To do that, I would have to become a PTI, so you'd have to change a trade. So I applied to change trades, and part of being a PTI is you had to be a parachute instructor. So I thought, I can cope with throwing myself out of an aeroplane. That sounds really good, but they wouldn't risk my leg. Mm. And so I said, well, can I have a second opinion? So I had a number of medicals, and they all said no, they wouldn't allow me to do the parachute element, which was quite sad. So I basically said, either you do or I'm out of here. And they didn't. So little did the RAF know, but I actually had a job lined up at the Brennan before I'd left the Air Force and hadn't actually got out of the Air Force at that point. So I came out of the Air Force in November, and then lived in Glencoe in the back of what was then a marina van for 4 months in the winter, from November to March, winter climbing in the back of a marina van with a friend of mine who we didn't get on that well. The only time we got on was when we were tied onto a piece of rope. After that, it was chalk and cheese. It was an interesting 4 months, but we got lots of climbing done.
What was your specialism at the Brennan? Was it all round, or was it climbing?
Yeah, I think probably at the Brennan, generally, the more strings to your bow, the better. I was known as a sort of a probably sea paddler and sort of climbing as well, I suppose, at the time, yeah.
Because you've been doing that as well as the same
other things as well. Yeah. So, yeah, I had quite a lot. I already had what was then was senior instructor and 5-star when I went to the Brennan. So that was, which would be equivalent to a level 4 coach now. So, and then obviously did my level 5 there. So that was an evolving thing. And then got involved with assessments now. So quite often at BCU meetings, I'm asked, what do we do in the old days? And as if I'm some form of guru of some sort. So, yeah, these young lads have got a lot to learn yet.
Rather a guru than a fossil. Okay, so how long were you at the Brennan for?
7 years. Mm. Yeah. So during the winter times, I was on an 11-month contract, so there's always a sort of quieter time. So that's where sort of the book evolved. I ran a series of evening classes for the local canoe club. A few people had asked when I put something on through the winter time, so I thought that's a good idea. And actually, somebody had done that for me many years beforehand, a guy called Mike Fennessy, who was a great inspirational sort of person in my early sea paddling career, fantastic man. So I thought, I'll put that on and sort of, you know, nothing much of it, and started producing handouts and the like. And what was going to be about six people on a course turned into, I think, three courses of 12 people, Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday nights. And somebody on the course said, why don't you put this in a book? And that's a good idea. And so little did I know that it would evolve into something, a beast, yeah, as it became. So
Let's talk about the book almost parallel to this course. Keep coming back to it if you need to. But I'd like to just keep going almost with you and the work that you've been doing and with sea kayaking. Because when did you start to get into all the designing aspects of the stuff you've
done? The design bit when I left.
Is that the next step? Because I'm not sure. It was.
I was still working at the Brendan, and then it was sort of time to move on, I suppose, in some ways, a natural involvement. And I'd always built kayaks anyway. We'd built some stuff at the Brennan and always sort of built stuff in fiberglass for a long while. I'd felt the sport had stagnated slightly to a point where what was the next level, really? And I thought my thoughts were, if I went and designed a single, then, you know, there's lots of singles about at the moment. And I thought, I'll commit and put my head on the block and design a double, was my sort of thoughts. And that's where that evolved. And the only other boat around at the time, sea boat double, was the Seascape, which was 6 inches wider. And we produced the boat. I convinced everyone at Crystal Palace that I paddled it, and it was fantastic. And in fact, it only came out of the mould the night before. And I remember the first time paddling it with my wife and two daughters in it, thinking, well, we may as well all go down if we're going to go down, because we put a lot onto this. And we paddled at Four Mile Bridge on a very wild, windy day. And it was great. I thought, this is amazing. My first envisions of making a boat that was so narrow in modern terms then is it would just tip over and we'd all be in the water. And it was far from that, really.
I mean, was this in your shed that you were knocking this up?
No. I partly built, at the time, I was also building surfboards and wave skis and that sort of thing. And I got some other guys who were pattern makers to sort of keep that going at the parallel sort of time. So it was actually built in a shed in Manchester. An old electrical substation that these guys got, and so we were flitting back and forth, shaping wave skis one minute and shaping the Aleut the next minute. So
was this the Howard Jeffs business going?
I had a business. It was known as Pure Perfection in that day. I had my hands in lots of, sort of different pies, and I was also making kayaks for other manufacturers.
That's how you started getting on to do a bit of designing for other people, was it?
No, I've not really done much design for other people. I've been sort of working on that, really. A little bit, but I've worked for other people as well at different times.
You contributed to their design. How did your I mean, any other boats you did after that?
No, we did. We modified. There was an old boat called the Lindisfarne, and that wasn't in production anymore. And that was quite a short, narrow boat, and so we altered that in true fiberglass fashion by sticking pieces of wood and filler and God knows what, and called that the boat the Innis, which was a short, 16-foot narrow, quite fast boat. But quite twitchy. It was quite, and a lot of people still liked it and have asked, is it still about? So, Aled Williams, who was at university and now works, who's got his own company, was working for me then in designing and shaping his own ideas. So yeah, it's an evolvement really of people in the trade, really.
If listeners want to hear more about Aled Williams, he's done a podcast that's already in the seakayakroutes.com podcast library. But have you always been interested, Howard Jeffs, in the kind of like the stuff that the other people weren't making, almost?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think there's still a huge amount to be developed in sea paddling. There is a lot. Lots of ideas and things, and some which you'll keep close to your chest and just launch them, and some which you won't. So I think there's, if anybody who's paddled, I think probably every sea paddler is an expert designer, because as that wave keeps hitting you in the face as you're paddling on day, you think, I wonder how I could get rid of that wave from splashing and hit me in the face, or that niggly bit of deck fitting or whatever. And I think it evolves from there, really. And so, yeah, there's quite a number of features on boats now which I can put hand up and heart and say, well, I did that. You know, the compass on the front hatch that you see on all boats now, I introduced that many years ago on the Aleut, and lots of people said it was too far away. And yet you see it on every boat now. And that was because when the compass is too close to you, people are staring down at it and end up being sick. So, you needed it far away, or a lot further away.
Really, compasses weren't at the end of the boat?
No, that was, they used to be fitted just sort of at level with your knees, basically. That was the normal place for a compass recess. So I thought, no, need to go up there, out the way. And also the other reason for putting it up there at the time was you used to see so many compasses knocked off or cracked, and it's an expensive piece of kit. So by locating it where it is now, the idea was that if somebody did run over you or your boat was damaged in some way, there was an element of protection of the recess for the hatch there that would protect the compass as well as giving you a good area to sort of look at.
Didn't you have a hand in the shaped dry bags as well?
Well, I don't know. I had a pile made. Yeah, whether I'm sure there's. Right. I'm a big believer of the full circle concept, and somebody must have done it before me, you know. So, but yeah, I mean, we had a pile made when we went to Greenland, and I think I probably had some made before then. But yeah, I mean, that's the ends of boats are always a nightmare to pack. So yeah. So.
What is it about the sport that about sea kayaking that sort of like floats your boat? What is it that you really like about it? If you go out, is it playing in a bay? Is it longer trips? What is it?
A journey. It's the journey. So it's the slide show I do is similar to that. I show an analogy of rock climbing and white water paddling are very similar. There's a lot of instant excitement. You start at the bottom of the crag, you finish at the bottom of the river or whatever, and there's lots of excitement. You can turn it on and off quickly, whereas I then sort of show a slide of climbing in the Alps or just moving through the mountains, and it's, you know, you become part of that environment. And to me, the journey and good company, really. I've done quite a bit of solo paddling, but, you know, finding somewhere quiet where you don't see anybody else, you choose your mates of who you go with, and you just, some days you might not be able to journey because of the weather, but some days you might get a long day and it just devolves. I've given up making plans. I just have a vague sort of idea of where I'm going to go on the M6 as I'm driving north, and I don't say where I'm going to go anymore because it never works out that way. But so just let it go with the flow, really.
I remember 2 years ago I attended one of your sessions here at the Sky Symposium, and one of the things that impressed me, and I think I wrote about it for a few of the magazines, was one of your camping techniques, the idea of preparing your food.
Oh.
You explain it to me, because you'll do a better job than I could.
I enjoy my food, and so does my wife. So it was a way of, we enjoy cooking as well. So when we go on trips, basically, we would make more of one particular meal that we might quite enjoy. And basically you then get out one of the pans that you would use on your trip, put a plastic bag in it, and then pour two portions into that pan inside the plastic bag, and then put that in a freezer in the pan, and then you choose a few more and you then make a large sausage out of foam, carry mat or that sort of thing, and then you can store these meals inside this sausage, and we can normally get away with four fresh meals packed in a sausage, foam sausage, and the last one on the last day will normally still be frozen. So you can eat well while you're away. Weight's not quite that much of a concern, and I wouldn't want to carry it on my back. But if you've got a rehydrated meal or a frozen meal, it doesn't really matter, and it's just a way of. But I'm evolving into drying food. A friend of mine is an expert at it, and that's very good. And Scottish Paddler Supplies sell their food dryers. And for those people who are thinking of doing longer trips, you can have the finest meals you like. Just add a drop of water and it still tastes the same. It's not like dehydrated food. It's just... So even more to learn.
I have to say, my wife is very good at that, Liz, because we did a Pacific Crest Trail and she dehydrated a third of our food before we went. She's got the home dehydrator. We've been doing it for quite a while. And she's written an article on this, and it's on the website. I think it's simonwillis.net. There's something about dehydrating.food. You'll be able to find it on there if anybody's interested in that. You spoke earlier about your book. At what stage did you stop just writing things down to try to do handouts and start to think, you know, there might be a book in this?
Somebody on the course suggested it. It wasn't my idea. They just said, have you thought about putting this together as a book? And I suppose I must have just munched on it and saw the volume of photocopying I was creating at the time.
Are we talking about manual typewriter here, bashing?
Yeah, it was, and it wasn't me bashing, because my capture of the English language is pretty poor. So there was a lady called Dottie that worked at Plassey Brennan in reception, and Dottie typed it all, so she was an angel. And I just did all the snowpake, just to correct the... and then another young lady did some diagrams for me. So it was, there was quite a lot of people involved. I mean, had I had a few years later, it would have been the Amstrad Revolution, and it would have been a slightly easier thing to have done. So
how did you get it published?
I did it myself. A friend of mine could get some stuff published. So if anybody's got a copy with a white cover and a blue spiral bound, they were the first 50. And I just gave them out to people, and just to see whether it would be worthwhile publishing. And then I took it to Jeff Good, the director of the BCU at the time. He was a great man, and just asked Jeff's opinion, really. I think I also asked John Ramwell, who was very active at that time. And they said, just go for it, you know. And so I went and saw the bank manager, loaned a few bob, contacted a local printer, and he printed it. And at the time, we had a Volkswagen Caravanette. He said, yeah, the books are ready. And so we went up in his printing business on the top of this very steep hill. When I saw how many books, 1,000 books are, we thought, where are we going to put these? And they lived at the top of the stairs, under the beds, in cupboards. There was just, we couldn't believe how much 1,000 books. And the poor old van struggled its way home with the pure weight. I don't know how much 1,000 tons of...
How do you distribute that, though?
Just by word of mouth. We at that period, we sold 5,000 copies in the end, which we just printed, published, and it was a bit of a... Yeah, we thought, if we don't sell this, what are we going to do with all this paper? But we did have an aga at the time, so we thought it might fuel that. So it would have been an expensive way to fuel the aga. So that, yeah. But they went incredibly quickly. And the bizarre thing is, which is one of the reasons to put it onto CD now, is that people still get in touch with me and ask, can I get a copy of your book?
Well, after this session here 2 years ago, Ken Nicol, one of the organisers, said to me, if you ever see that book in an old store, try and get hold of it. And I remember mentioning that to you, and you eventually managed to get me a Word file. Well, that was a story in itself. And that is now available again.
It's available on CD in a Word file with some... just a few pictures in it at the moment, and it's just a pure Word file, and I just tidied it up slightly. So... it's not it's not protected in any way. I would hope it will be copyright. And so, yes, it's very easy to copy. If somebody buys one copy, they can dish it out to them. I would hope that sea kayakers are a more sociable sort of people. So basically what I put in there, because I cannot really at this point in time commit, or I could commit the time, but I would rather commit the time to other things at the moment. So I don't want to be tied down to a date where I'd have to finish a new book. And so the plan is to... produce amended or new chapters. One of the comments when I first put it out, there's nothing on technique, and so I've got somebody actually typing up quite a large chunk on technique, which I'd produced some time ago, and that'll be classed as an update. So in the inside cover of each CD is a number and the date, and people just need to email me that, and then I will then provide them with the updates via email. And the other thing, hopefully, which will stop people copying, is I'll make a donation to the Marine Conservation Society for every copy sold. So I'm sort of picking on people's heartstrings, really, to say, you know, you're denying other people and other things, as well as me, a few bob as well.
I know Kevin Mansell's selling this on his website, cpaddler.co.uk, so I know you can go to that website if people wanted to buy this. How much is it?
£12.99. That includes postage and packing. And if you just drop me an email, I can pop them in the post, and that's h.n.jeffs@btinternet.com. So that's quite easy.
So you said you prefer to be doing other things at the moment rather than sitting there writing. What are you doing?
I've got some ideas on other boats at the moment, which I'd like to sort of work. I'm also working with another manufacturer as well at the moment. One or two people from the surfing fraternity have asked me to produce another surf boat, which it's sat in the garage for the last 2 years. It's nearly finished, but it just needs those finishing touches there. And somebody's also involved in Arctic journeying at the moment and has asked me to produce a canoe-type sledge, possibly. And so we're chatting about things at the moment. So that's quite interesting, and that's interesting, to say the least. So
you always like having lots of things on at once.
I normally got lots of things in the air at once, yeah. And I still enjoy the coaching. I'm out to Nova Scotia in September. I've been asked to go to Georgia in October, and then somebody just said, I go to Seattle Way in November. So that's quite nice. So it's finding the time. But in the end of the day, you still have to make a living, and that's the hard part. So, yeah, balancing all these bits is entertaining at times, yeah.
But you still like that? I mean, is it the BCU courses that you're delivering out there?
Yeah, I still do BCU courses, and I also do work for the BCU as well as a centre inspector. And I also work quite a lot with the universities. In another past job, I worked as a sports health and safety type person for Oxford and Sheffield University. So I still have a lot of involvement. I do a lot of work with university students in the wintertime running skills courses, which I really enjoy because they're really enthusiastic and just big sponges for information. So they're great to work with. Great young people provide a lot of enthusiasm, and it's just really nice to work with them.
Any big trips you have planned?
I've got nothing planned at the moment. No, no, nothing.
As places you'd like to go?
Oh, there's always some. I'd love to go to New Zealand. That's got to be high on my list. So, but there's never any shortage of places to go. But I'm always asked when I do a slideshow, is where's your favourite place? And I think we're spoiled. The west coast of Britain and Ireland, you can't touch it. We have the best bit of coastline in the world. There's other places. I mean, I paddled in Greenland, which was fantastic. Paddling next to icebergs is a great opportunity, but the coastline wasn't as exciting as ours, you know. So if we could have Scotland with a few icebergs and the way the climate's changing at the moment, who knows, we might get that. So that would just be about perfect, really, you know.
That's Howard Jeff's Dynamo of Kayaking Ideas. And that's a very good book, by the way. It's only available as a Word document on a CD, but it's well worth having in the collection. And while we're talking about collections, do check out the collection of podcasts in the podcast library at seakayakroutes.com. I'm Simon Willis. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.